Blog Talk Radio.
Once in a lifetime does a great author set the stage for a wonderful trip into the minds and lives of their characters. Yvonne Mason doesn't just write books, she crafts memorable experiences. Best-selling true crime fiction author Yvonne Mason will leave you on the edge of your seat and checking behind every corner for the weirdos that only real life can breed. Find her books on Amazon.com and make sure you check out such titles like Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option, The Pink Canary, and Silent Scream today.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday night, February the 1st, 2017, and if it's Wednesday night, it's the beginning of a new four-day week for Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and yes, that's my good friend Christopher Dunham, who is my ad man, promoting me one more time, since this is one of the few avenues that I get to promote myself anymore. And I have such exciting news. Oh, I looked at the numbers this morning, and my goal was to have 10,000 listeners by the end of this year. This show is only 6 months old. We started this show on July the 29th of last year. And when I started this show, I would venture to say that I had made up my mind that I would be happy if I had 5,000 listeners by the end of this year. Well, ladies and gentlemen, because of all of y'all and because of my wonderful, wonderful guests who are the reason this show is so successful, as of this morning, just on this show, just on Blog Talk Radio, we have 3,213 listeners. Now, even though this is a show out of the U.S., 65% of our listeners are out of Australia, our friends from down under. I want to thank y'all for supporting this show and supporting the guest and being such wonderful, wonderful listeners of the show on a continual basis, because without our listeners, we would just be taking up air. The show is heard worldwide. We have listeners in England, in South Africa, in Norway, in Canada, in New Guinea, Australia, and of course the good old USA. But I have to tell you, it's not just from this show on Blog Talk. This show is also put on podcast that I have, which brings the total numbers up to 9,100 listeners for this show as of today. 9,100. We are 900 away from that 10,000 listener goal. I am so proud and so happy because my guests get a following on this show, and the more I bring them on, the more following they get and the more successful they become, and it makes me very, very happy for them. Now, that being said, tonight we have a return guest, and she will be back more than the second time. She will keep coming back because this is how they get their product and themselves out there for people to know that they got new things coming out. Author Leanne Sotomayor Murphy. She has been on our show before. She delves into the human experience as she writes from the heart about everyday people caught up in very extraordinary circumstances. And though she makes her home in a small town of, okay, I'm going to massacre this name, Nesho, which is probably an Indian name, I'll let her correct me, Missouri in the Ozarks. She is a native of St. Joseph, Missouri. And when she's not writing or reading, she might be found in the classroom as a substitute teacher. Leanne has penned more than 20 full-length novels, a number of novellas, and she has been included in over 24 anthologies and published many short stories and articles. Leanne writes a weekly column for the, again, I'm going to massacre the name, Nesho Daily News. She is a member of the Romance Writers of America, Missouri Writers Guild, and the Ozark Writers League. Leanne's novels and short fiction have won awards, and her publishers include World Castle Publishing, Evernight Publishing, CleanReads.com, and Champagne Books. Now, on top of being this wonderful author with all of this written word to her repertoire, she is married with 3 children. 2 of them are in college. 1 is still in high school. She also enjoys cooking, gardening, and doing something that we don't do anymore, which I wish we did, and that is sitting on the front porch in what passes for suburbs in a small town. Welcome, my friend. Again, I am so tickled that you were here on the 83rd episode with 9,100 total listeners.
Well, I am delighted to be here. Good evening to you, and good evening to all the listeners all around the world. That is so exciting.
It is, and it's because of all of y'all. I can't do this alone. They get tired of me and kick me off the air. It's all about y'all. I mean, this is magnificent. Just, I would cry if I was one to shed tears, and it would be tears of joy because y'all make this the show that it is, and for that I am so honored and so proud and so humbled.
Well, but, I am proud to be a guest on the show. I feel honored to be on the show, so, yeah.
Oh, come on, honey. Really? I mean, with all of this?
You've got a show. It's going amazingly well, gaining listeners every week. So, yes, I'm delighted and proud to be on the show.
Well, I'm proud to be here. But that being said, let's just jump right in because there were some things we didn't talk about the last time you were on the show. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we already did her history, so you've got to go back and listen to the first show that we did with Ms. Leanne, which was a funny, funny show. We did all of her history. We did all of that. So we're not going to spend the hour talking about how she got from point A to point B. It's like beating a dead horse. We already did that. We're going to talk about some things that we didn't get to last time. You have poems on a children's page in a local newspaper?
Yes, that was my very first publication.
Tell me about that. Do you remember the poem?
I do, and somewhere I have a photocopy of it. I don't have it right here at hand, but as a child, I was a reader. And I also spent a lot of time, my grandparents took care of me very much of the time, so I was used to listening to old-time stories and history. So they had a children's page in the St. Joseph paper at that time. Some of my older cousins could draw very well. I couldn't draw a straight line, but they could draw, and it had poems and little stories and artwork. Well, I wanted to be like my cousins, but I knew I couldn't draw. So I wrote a poem and sent it in, and they actually used it, which just at the time delighted me and kind of set me on my course to become a writer because people were clipping it out, mostly family members, but a lot of other people too. And by the time I was a teenager, I wrote some more poems for a page for older. It was called Reader Sharing Creativity. At the time, they were just putting through a big new highway interchange loop that looped all around St. Joseph, sits on the Missouri River, and the new highway is right between the old part of town and the river, and a lot of it just, to me, tore out family roots, the neighborhoods where some of my family had lived and died, and so I wrote a poem about that called Progress? That one, a lot of people clipped out, saved, hung on their fridge, which to me, that's fame. Clip you out and hang it on the fridge. So that's kind of where I got started and really interested in writing because I wrote the little poem mostly to keep up with my cousins. And then people liked it. I saw that, you know, I love to read stories, but that made me want to write stories.
Well, what I find interesting is, because you are friends with me on Facebook, you could almost say you're not just a substitute teacher anymore. You teach pretty much all the time. So how in the world do you have time to write a weekly column? And please pronounce that city right so I won't keep massacring it.
Okay, the city, it is an Indian name, but it's Neosho.
Neosho. See, ladies Neosho. And gentlemen, I massacred it. I am so sorry. Neosho. But, and it's pronounced almost like it's spelled.
It is, actually. It's one of those things, kind of like my maiden name, which, of course, is the Sonheimer in my name. Everybody thinks it's going to be hard, but that and the Osho both, they're really a lot like they look like they'd be.
Exactly. They are pronounced phonetically like they're spelt.
Yes,
anyway,
everybody thinks it's going to be hard.
What is this beautiful column? And I'm sure it is absolutely over the top, and I'm sure people can't wait to read it. What do you talk about in this weekly column?
Well, it started out, and for years it was just simply called Hindsight. And I wrote about just basically memories or tied into the season or events. Then the newspaper had a change in editor, and when he found out I was a writer, he wanted to do a writer's view. So that's the column now. It's called A Writer's View. But it's really popular. I have people come up to me, you know, go to the supermarket, the store, at school. People say, oh, I know you. You're the lady from the newspaper. So a lot of people read it. For about 8 months, it's been A Writer's View. But people seem to like it no matter what the title is.
Well, what do you... So he just changed the title, but it's still, you still write in the same vein as you did before?
Pretty much. I just kind of tie it into writing. Last week's column, I wrote about what's in a name, why I use my whole name, Leanne Sonheimer Murphy, to write, because I want people who've known me all my life to realize that's me, that at school I'm Mrs. Murphy. And then I wrote about how I develop character names, what the process is to choose those names, used a few examples, like in my newest book came out January 16th, it's called Canaan's Land, but it's a name. I was at the tire shop one day, and a gentleman said to me, oh, you're the writer lady, do you have a new book? Which I like, I love that. And he said, is it set in Bible times? And I said, no. Then it's in the book, because I ran across the using Canaan as a first name, and I thought, how really cool and different. So my character is Canaan Moss, and he's like the fourth Canaan Moss in his family, so it's a traditional name handed down, but in everyday life he's called Cain. So that was one column last week. This week's was kind of a potpourri of, people ask me all the time, how do you start writing? What should I do? So I wrote a column just giving them some basic pointers. If you write, here's some things you need to be doing.
I bet you are everybody's new best friend in that area that has a dream to write, because that is a tool for them to use. What a wonderful thing to be doing.
Well, I always tell people, I had people who encouraged me, so of course I want to pass that on and encourage other people.
And I had a note that you penned your first novel in the back of your fifth grade binder, and I don't think we talked about that the last time.
Probably not, but that is true. I wanted to write a novel, and so in the fifth grade, in the back of my pressed blue cardboard three-ring notebook, I had started writing a novel. And to me at the time, it was the biggest thing. It was so exciting, and it's still exciting. To me, writing is like reading intensified, because I get to choose where the story goes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And when I finally finished that, I brought it home with a lot of trepidation and showed it to my parents. And my dad was just like, my goodness, this child wrote a novel. Whether it was good or bad, it was very childish, I'm sure. My mom was kind of like, okay, well, it's a kid thing. But my dad was, he always encouraged me in my writing 100%. And he was like over the moon, because I had attempted to write a novel at the age, fifth grade age.
And how many fifth graders do you know that, number one, have that desire, number two, have that tenacity and stick-to-itiveness to write a complete novel, because even for adults, it can get frustrating.
Oh, definitely, yes, it can.
Now, I also read, because you know how I am, I dig up things on my guests if they go, where did you find that?
You are very good at it.
You know, I'm bounty hunting for years, so I dig up things. And I dig up things that most people wouldn't think to be interesting to talk about. For instance, penning a novel as a fifth grader, and it was your first one, and writing a poem to go into the local paper, that set you on your path. But even more so, you read to your children. And not only did you read to your children, but your genres and the authors that you read to your children, from Dr. Seuss to Edgar Allan Poe, which are two of my favorite authors, because I read Dr. Seuss to my kids, read Edgar Allan Poe to my kids, and to find someone else that read all of those things to their children is almost unheard of anymore.
It is, but, you know, Poe has such beautiful language.
Yes.
So when they were small, I just thought, I'm going to read them this beautiful, powerful poetry as well as the fun stuff.
And it probably gave them a greater appreciation for literature in general and for those authors that are difficult to read, as in Poe and Shakespeare, because of the language they use, and the ability to decipher the plot or the thought process that these authors were going through when they wrote.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yes.
And would it be fair to say that you translate this enthusiasm and this desire to give knowledge to a child into the students that you teach?
I do my best. I try to turn them on to a love of reading and the written word and language and history. I sub almost every subject that there is, because it's obviously a fairly small district, because it's a small town. But I really try really hard to, turn kids on to learning, because I've met so many kids who don't like to read. But sometimes I give them one of my books, usually the tamer ones, or I suggest books for them to read. A really cool story, I won't mention the young man's name, but when I first started subbing, again, 8 years ago, he was in high school. He didn't read much, but I gave him a copy of one of my first novels that was set in this small town, and the brothers, who are the hero and his brother, are kids from the wrong side of the tracks. They're not rich kids. They're just regular kids. Well, he read that book because I gave it to him.
Wow.
And his dad actually saw him and was like, "You're reading a book?" And he said, "Yeah, my teacher gave it to me." But he went on from that to develop an interest in weather. And I actually bought him some of his early weather books with weather information because I wanted to encourage him. So he's become a storm chaser. But even beyond that, this is the cool thing, how one little thing, it just builds. He started taking pictures of weather and storms. Now he is branching out. He is an awesome young photographer, and he is doing some incredible shots, just amazing photography. And I'm proud that I kind of helped point him in a new direction, because of getting interested in reading led to storm chasing, led to photography. And that makes, you know, days when you think, I'm not making any difference, I think about that student, and I think, yes, I am.
Yeah, if it's just one student, and you don't know that down the road what that student recalls doesn't have an impact on them and leads them in a direction that you may never know.
That's true. That is absolutely true.
That story just gave me chill bumps because I can just see this young man who had no desire to read because reading is boring, go from reading a book that you gave him to being a fantastic storm chaser, which is a dangerous job within itself, and then photography of the different weather patterns and what's going on out there when it can be dangerous as well. What a credit to you, my friend, and that impact that you had on him. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what we preach here, is that you don't ever know when you come across someone that you leave a part of yourself with that person and that person leaves a part of themselves with you. So be careful of the way that you present yourself to others because you don't want to leave a negative impact, just like Leanne left this beautiful, beautiful impact on this young man. What an amazing story. I am so proud of him.
I am too, and he knows it. We're friends on Facebook now, and we occasionally run into each other. But it is just, he has started his photography. He's doing a lot now with abandoned places. And he started doing, like, a series using models to explore different, like, topics, like addiction. And they are just powerful photos. Amazing.
You need to get him to hook up with me to come on the show.
I do. And I've talked to him about he should really do a book of his photographs.
Absolutely. Oh, my. Yes. Please ask him to come on my show. It would be such an honor to talk to this young man. You can come and co-host with me, and we'll talk to him together. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be fun. Yes, it would.
Okay. That is your project. Just tell me when. We'll set it up. I'm
all
serious.
Right. I'll get
I really would
too.
Like to. Yeah, let's keep paying this forward with this young man.
Oh,
now,
yes, definitely.
Thank you, my friend, for sharing that. That just makes my heart swell even more. There's a book that I think you wrote, that I know you wrote, called Cold Black Blues. And
yes.
This book is dedicated, ladies and gentlemen, to all the grannies and ancestors. And I put a big fat why behind this because I just find that very interesting. Explain a little bit about the book and then why you dedicated it.
All right. The book is Cold Black Blues. It's set in West Virginia in one of the little coal towns. And as you may know, West Virginia's economy is not very well these days. And they do a lot of mountaintop removal mining where they just scrape off the top of a mountain. One of my grandfathers was from the very southwest corner of Virginia, not West Virginia, but Virginia. And he unfortunately died before I was born, but I had the privilege to know his mother, who I called Grandmammy. And she was a quintessential, tough southern woman. She lived into her 90s. She was just marvelous. And in last year, no, yeah, 2015, one of my daughters was going to school in Fairfax, Virginia. And then she decided to come back to Missouri. So we made a trip out to retrieve all her things from her dorm. And, of course, we traveled through West Virginia. And that just, I was so struck by the beauty of the land, the natural beauty of the land, and yet compared to what the coal industry has caused and what the decline of the coal industry has caused economically. So I just felt like I had to write a story set in that region. And then when I got ready to do a dedication, I thought, I need to do it. My granny, as I think you already know, was very instrumental in my life, really.
Uh-huh.
She always liked to say she raised me, and she pretty well did. And to honor her and Grandmammy and all the other old grandmothers in the generations, because to me that's what it's all about. It's all about family and generation from one generation to the other.
And ladies and gentlemen, that book is called The Cold Black Blues, and I highly recommend this book. Now, you've got, before we get into Canaan's Land and talk about it in depth, because you know I always like to tease the audience. I want them to hang around to the end of the show, sort of like Johnny
sure.
Carson used to do. I'm going to, you know, tonight's guests are blah, 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 and Phyllis Diller. Well, what Johnny didn't tell you was Phyllis Diller was going to be the last guest on the show because he wanted you to hang around for the show. So thank you, Johnny Carson, for that little tidbit of how to keep people in line and paying attention. The Widow's End. What was the reason for that title? And tell us a little bit about that book.
Okay. At one time, there was an organization called the Knights of Pythias. And they were like a men's fraternal organization, similar but somewhat a little more in-depth than, say, the Masons or any of the groups like that. One of the things that the Pythians, which is what they called themselves, Knights of Pythias, but they were the Pythians, they wanted to provide homes in their old age for the widows, for any senior surviving male members, but also for children. So across the country in, like, I'm thinking it's like 10 different cities, they built Pythian castles. And these are amazingly huge structures. There's one in Springfield, Missouri, which is about an hour away from me. And one day while in Springfield, I went on the tour, and I was just so taken with this concept of how they provided for the widows, usually orphan children, sometimes just children who needed a home, and also for the elder members of the organization. So because of that, I thought, I'm always big on this what if. What if one of the widows happened to be a young woman? So I have a young woman who is widowed and ends up having no place to go but to this Pythian castle. And she's not overly happy there. She happens to meet a schoolmaster because there is and was a school just across the road and down from this Pythian castle. So in my story, she meets this schoolmaster. A romance develops between them, and it ends up the widow's end is that she has a happy ending because she meets this gentleman, and they fall in love, and she gets to leave and go back to a normal life.
Now, these Pythian castles, are they built like castles?
Yes, very much. None of them look exactly the same, but the one in Springfield is built of stone. It's three stories. It has a tower. It's just absolutely beautiful. On this particular one, it actually shows up in one of my historical romances, Betty Soldier, when I use the pen name Patrice Wayne. In World War II, there was an army army hospital that surrounded that and used part of it for their soldiers, which then leads to one thing about Neosho, Missouri. It's the home of Camp Crowder, which is still a National Guard base, and Crowder College, which I attended with my good friend, mystery writer Thomas S. Mulvey, known in everyday life as Paul Hurd. But Camp Crowder was the real Camp Swampy from the Beetle Bailey comic strip. The artist, Mort Walker, was stationed at Camp Crowder, and it was nicknamed Camp Swampy because when it rained, everything got really swampy. He was one of several famous people who were stationed there. Carl Reiner was stationed there, and Dick Van Dyke was stationed there.
I did not know that.
A lot of people don't, but I think it's such a cool story. So I share that one whenever I can.
Every time you come on here, I learn something new. I love it.
But anyway, the Pythian Castle, it was used as an officer's club. So in one of the scenes from Betty Soldier, which is based around Camp Crowder during World War II, the main character drives a general there and back. Because when I get interested in a place, I'm hard to stop. I just want to keep working that in someplace.
Well, now, are these Pythian castles still used for that purpose?
No.
Or are they closed? Are they museums?
They're museums. The one in Springfield, a really interesting, a mother and daughter have purchased it. They have events there. They do tours pretty much daily. They do swing dancing, just all kind of events. I think they've had some ghost hunters come in there and do investigations. It's a really fascinating place.
Okay. Putting Noosa, Missouri on my bucket list to visit, Springfield, because Missouri within itself is filled with history.
Oh, it is, definitely. In my hometown where I was raised, St. Joseph, that is where the Pony Express began and where outlaw Jesse James met his end.
See, ladies and gentlemen. Yes.
That's why I have such an interest in history. I grew up surrounded by it.
And you could not miss it because it was there.
Yeah, it just was. It was part of our everyday life. It was a hotel. Then it was a garment factory. Then it was sat derelict and empty for many years. But it is now a fantastic museum complex called the Patey House in St. Joseph. And on the grounds, they have the Jesse James House where he lived and where he was shot and killed.
Oh, my goodness. I'm coming to Missouri, putting it on my bucket list.
You would love it. And the Patey House, you probably would. You want to stay. The Patey House is a few blocks from the Pony Express stables, which are still there from the 1800s. And across from the Patey House is this very small little park, and they have a train engine that is permanently a display there. My great uncle, Ben Hayward, my granny's brother, that was his train for many years. He was the engineer on that exact train. And when they decided to retire it and put it in the park, they built a short line. They sold shares on it as a takeoff, like Monopoly, where they have the short line. Mm-hmm. And he got to be the one who drove the train to its permanent resting place. And today it's fenced. Before it was fenced, I got to be put up in that train, and he showed me how to drive a train.
Oh, my. You have been blessed in so many ways. You could do a story about the train, because now you know how to drive one. Oh, that's amazing.
I'm definitely not boring.
No, you're not. I learned something new.
Not boring.
No, because I learn something new every time I talk to you. Now, we briefly talked about Canaan's Land, but let's go back to Canaan's Land because that is the latest release. And when we briefly talked about it, you talked about how Canaan Moss is an old family name. And for those that don't understand, family names have been passed down in the South for generations. I guess some of them came over from the old country. And there was a method to the madness of passing those names down, especially the Irish and the Scots, is they would, the first daughter was named after the wife's mother, and the second daughter was named after the wife's father, and the first son was named after the husband's father, am I right?
Yes, absolutely.
And it goes on and on. So explain a little bit about Canaan Moss and how that came about.
Well, one day I ran across the first name Canaan, I do a lot of genealogy too. That's been a passion of mine since I was a teenager. But one day I ran across the name Canaan used as a first name, and I thought, wow, that is really cool. It's a neat first name, and to me it would be definitely a name that would be handed down. Now, sometimes my stories take a lot of ingredients and cooking to come together, but for some reason that one just, I started writing down as I had the inspiration where this story would be. I decided his name would be Canaan Moss, and he would be the fourth Canaan Moss to live on the same land. Now, in Missouri, they have a program they call Century Farms. Any farm that can be documented has been in the same family for at least 100 years can be recognized as a Missouri Century Farm. They usually get a really nice sign they can put out by the road or, you know, on the driveway or whatever. It's kind of a neat honor and a neat thing. And, of course, as times continue, it's very hard to make a living farming full-time, so you don't see as many Century Farms. So I decided Canaan would be living on his family Century Farm. And unlike a lot of people, they have to, you know, in the Ozarks today, they often have to take a job elsewhere. They farm when they can. Maybe they run cattle or have a crop, but they also work at one of the local industries or, you know, do something because they just can't make a living. So that's where we have Cain. This is what he's called, Cain for short, when the book opens. Cain's hanging on to his land. He's trying to make a go of it to be a full-time farmer like his ancestors. He has met a young lady journalist at the local paper. Her name is Caitlin Koch. She's interested in doing a story on him because she's actually kind of interested in Cain. Before they can really get that together, one day Cain goes out and, I don't want to give away the whole story, but he's found to have marijuana growing on a back corner of his property. He says he's innocent, it's not his, but he's still arrested. So the young lady, Caitlin, is going to try to help clear his name, but as the book progresses, there's a lot of complications as to who actually grew that marijuana and how much do they want Canaan Moss out of the picture so no one will know. So it's a romance, but it's also suspense, too.
Hmm. I might have to delve into this one. 'Tis a fine mess he's got himself in, isn't it?
Oh, yes, and very difficult. He's trying hard to figure a way out. Because it seems like everyone has turned against him because they believe it.
Now, you said something that those that don't write may not have picked up on, but I did because I write as well. And it is true that when we start a book, ladies and gentlemen, we normally just don't sit down and go to town and whip that book out overnight. There's a process. And I'm sure that even though you live in that area, you had to do some research, did you not?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Let the folks know some of the research that you had to do, even though the story almost wrote itself by the time you got through, but you had to make sure that it was believable.
Oh, yes, definitely. I had to research marijuana bust, you know, to see what happens when someone is busted for growing marijuana, what happens. I fortunately have a cousin who was elected in November the sheriff of Buchanan County, which is St. Joseph, so I kind of have a go-to source for law enforcement questions. But I had to look up, you know, people think research for historicals, but there is tremendous research for any book I write because I want to get those details right.
And the reason for that is because readers are very intelligent. They will pick up on something that, A, is not believable, and, B, that is just absolutely wrong. They'll call an author out on that quicker than anything else. Would that be a true statement?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, I have run across books that I read, and some little detail was, like I read one book, it was supposed to be set in what's called the Arklatex. That's Arkansas, Texas, Louisiana, where the corners of those states come together. Now, my husband's family is originally from Shreveport, Louisiana, so I've been through that country a lot. They describe that, this is the very bottom tip of Arkansas, as being part of the Ozarks. Well, the Ozarks stopped, you know, hundreds of miles north of there. It's flat country. And so I'm reading a book, and it's describing this country as being Ozark Mountains, and I'm going, no, that's not right. And it totally turned me off, that book, and actually any more by the same author, which I'll be nice and not name. But
I'll be,
you know,
all because the author did not do their homework.
Exactly. That's why, you know, things like that. I worked with a lady who came from a small town in Kansas. That town was mentioned in one of Stephen King's novels. In his novel, he said it was a town square. The woman was absolutely livid. She grew up there, and she said, it's not, it's a main street. Small detail, but to somebody that knows, those details matter a lot.
Yeah, because what it does is it turned you off to reading the book because you had been there. You knew that area. And you couldn't get past the details. And as we all say, the devil is in the details. And that is very, very true. The devil is absolutely in the details.
Absolutely. So, you know, any place I write about, I have been, if not lived, I have been there at least long enough to have some, you know, working knowledge. And I still do tremendous research. Even if I'm writing about this area I live in, some of my books have been set in my hometown of St. Joseph, I still do research because I want to get every detail right so that someone isn't turned off or even angry because some detail is wrong.
And especially in Canaan's land, if you have somebody that's affiliated with law enforcement or with the criminal justice system, and you didn't do your homework on that, they might call you out on it because, again, the devil is in the details. I know when my husband and I are watching crime shows on television or we're reading a book that has a criminal element to it or a criminal justice element to it, we spot those little details like crazy. We'll look at each other and we'll go, that prosecutor would never do that. That defense attorney would never, that judge would never do that. And it just ruins the whole thing for us because
well,
we can't get past. It does.
And, you know, similarly, one of my daughters is a nursing student. She's studying to be a nurse. She does work in a nursing home now. And she'll be watching a show, and then she'll be like, no, 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 they don't do that. That's not how it's done. Same kind of thing,
You wonder where the writer's heads are. I know they have a time constraint, and I know that they write for entertainment, but those of us that are in those fields can't get past that glitch because we can't wrap our head around how they got there.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about the Missouri River, because the Missouri River itself has got a, and I know, and I'm pretty sure, I haven't read a whole lot of your books, but I'm pretty sure the Missouri River shows up in some of your books. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes.
There's a lot of history on the Missouri River. Let the folks know some of the history and where it shows up in some of your books.
Okay, let's see. One of my books, my historical romances, I write under the pen name of Patrice Wayne, because at the time the publisher thought it would be a good idea to separate my contemporary and romantic suspense from the very different historical romances. One of my favorite historical romances I've done is called The Aviator's Angel. It's set in the 1920s in my hometown of St. Joseph in what I call the old, old neighborhood where my grandparents lived when they were first married, where they lived when they first had their children. And so that part of town lies behind a big bluff. The top of that bluff is called Wyeth Hill, and you have a fantastic view of the river and on over into Kansas, because across the river is Kansas from there. And so in that book, you have a young pilot who served in the First World War. And, of course, the 1920s was when aviation just really took off hugely. So, you know, you have him, the original airport, airfield, was down near the river. So, you know, there's a lot of descriptions flying over the river, taking off over the river. You know, it figures very prominently in that book because it's a huge part of history, not only for that era. Now, I haven't done anything with that in my books, but, of course, Lewis and Clark went up the Missouri River as they headed on westward in their famous explorations.
Where they wound up in Oregon.
Yes.
Now, when you did the book about the aviator, we go back to research. You, again, had to research what could be seen from the sky from whatever point they took off or whichever direction they went in. And would it be fair to say that not only did you have to do research on what they would see, but you had to go back and do research on that time period to see what they could see from the sky? Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. Because I had to write about the city and the terrain as it was then, which is a really big thing because the course of the river was actually different in the 1920s than it is today. Because in the early 1950s, there was a huge flood, and when the river receded, it cut a new path.
Really?
So there, oh, yes. And so there's some parts where even now, if you're driving along the road, MacArthur Drive, that's at the base of Wyeth Hill alongside the river, you'll see old roads that just drive up to the edge and vanish because they used to go straight across. The really interesting thing is in the, like, what year was it they had huge floods? Around the early 90s, when the floodwaters receded, the river at that point, being a very contrary, wild river, the Missouri tried to revert to the original course. But they couldn't really let it because in the years since then, so much had been built up. So the Army Corps of Engineers had to come in and kind of guide it back on track.
And that just goes to prove, Leanne, that Mother Nature has a will of her own. And as much as man tries to tame her, there's no taming her because she's going to do what she's going to do.
Absolutely.
See, I learned something else new. That I know that the Army Corps of Engineers likes to reroute rivers and make lakes and mess up Mother Nature, but it didn't dawn on me that a river would reroute itself simply because it flooded and then receded and then said, oh, we're going to take this path now.
Yeah.
Well, we're going, can you believe that we're getting down to the final minutes here? I mean, where's the hour going again?
I know, it's hard to believe.
I got an education in geography. I got an education in the history of Springfield and the town where you live. Oh, and just because we're on research, explain the name of the little city you live in, why it's an Indian name, where it came from.
Okay, it's supposed to be an Osage Indian name, and the meaning of Neosho is supposed to mean clear, abundant water. And the center of Neosho, right at the point, they have a monument that says this is where the city of Neosho was laid out. There is a beautiful spring, a clear, free-flowing spring that's called the Big Spring, and the little park is called Big Spring Park. And that was a place where, apparently, the Native Americans would say, there was never a settlement here, but they would say, let's meet at Neosho, at the big, clear spring. So that's where the name comes from, and it's
Can people still drink from that spring?
Actually, it's posted that they're not supposed to drink from it, but I think people do sometimes. You know, it has posting a sign that says, unsafe water, do not drink, because I'm sure they probably don't want any liability if someone drank it and became ill. But it's really clear, it's really, truly beautiful. The water cascades down a huge, like a cliff face, and then makes a little pool, and then it flows, and they've kind of trained it. It flows across the road, and they have a deep pool where they have trout swimming, and you can feed the trout. It's very picturesque. One more thing to put on your bucket list when you come to Missouri.
I'll be looking you up, say, take me to all these places, Leanne. Please, please. Need to take pictures and think of storylines. That would be a great book for you.
It would, yes, it would be, really.
Okay, put that one on your bucket list. Now, tell these lovely, lovely listeners where you can be found and how they can get in contact with you if they want to.
Okay, my books, Canaan's Land, is available in paperback as well as every other electronic format for Kindle, for Nook. So you can find it on Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com, Smashwords. I'm trying to think of all the... Most any place you can buy e-books, you're going to find the e-book copy, and you can get the paperback, both Barnes & Noble, from Amazon, or you can order one from me, and I'll autograph for you. You can find me on Facebook. I have a personal page that has close to 5,000 friends, and I also have an author page, and they're both just under my name, Leanne Sonheimer Murphy. I'll spell that for anybody that might need it, S-O-N-T-H-E-I-M-E-R. As you can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, I'm all lowercase Leanne Ryder, just run together like one word. So if somebody wanted to follow me on Twitter, they could find me there.
Do you have a website?
I do. It's called A Page in the Life, Leanne Sonheimer Murphy. And you can contact me through that. I sometimes post first chapters, free first chapter reads, to try to intrigue people, thinking if they read the first chapter, they might be interested enough, they want to buy the book. I promised my friend Bennett Pomerantz, I'm to mention this, on February 22nd, I'm going to co-host his program, Let's Talk. His usual co-host, Rachel Thompson, is going to be out on assignment, so I'll be co-hosting with Bennett on his show February 22nd. So tonight I'm the guest, and in a few weeks I'm going to be the host, co-host.
Well, all right, what time is his show?
I knew you'd ask me that.
is it the 11 o'clock one, or is it the 8 o'clock one?
I think it's the 8 o'clock one. We actually just arranged all this earlier today, so he told me to be sure and mention it, but they can check
and ladies and gentlemen, it is also here on Blog Talk Radio. It's Let's Talk with Bennett Pomerantz. So, yes, hooked up with Leanne on February the 22nd. I'm pretty sure it's the 8 o'clock one. He and I have been trying to hook up for me to be on his show, but by 11 o'clock on Friday night, I'm ready to go to bed. And then on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, I have my own show. So don't know when we can hook up. We're still working on that one. Now, ladies and gentlemen, y'all all know that I believe in dreams because our entire world is built on dreams. The inventors, the painters, the artists, the builders, the writers, the musicians, the scientists, the philosophers, they're all dreamers. So, Leanne, what advice would you give a dreamer?
Never stop dreaming. Never give up on your dream. Some of the best advice I ever had was handed down to me from my paternal grandfather, Otto Sonheimer, and his thing was, there's no such word as can't, because you can. That has carried me to hang on to a lot of dreams and keep going till I started realizing those dreams, like having novels published.
And it doesn't matter how old you are when that dream starts coming true. It doesn't matter how young you are. I mean, your first poem, you were a child when you wrote that poem. You wrote your first book in the fifth grade. And it just kept morphing from there. And I'm sure that at times you've been writing forever. So,
yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, what we're saying is never, ever allow anyone to steal your dream. It's your dream. They can only steal it with your permission, so don't give them permission. And if it's like Leanne said, if someone says you can't do this, just say, watch me. Because you can. It's all a matter of how bad do you want it. Would that be a fair statement, Leanne?
Yes, absolutely. You just have to want it enough to never give up and to pursue that dream.
And everything you do, ladies and gentlemen, do it towards that dream. Whatever studies you take in school, whatever passion becomes yours, put that, and if your dream changes, that's okay too.
Yes, absolutely.
Because just look at the young man that Leanne, without even knowing, who knows what his dream was, but it became something else. And apparently, and remember, you're going to hook him up and we're going to co-host.
Absolutely.
And get this young man, because I'm excited about that. Now, tomorrow night, I have a brand new guest that I've never had before. The man is absolutely amazing. His name is Dee McCauley. He is an independent film director. And he directed and produced Border Patrol, which is a short story that my good friend Andrea Dean Van Skoyek wrote. He is going to be on my show tomorrow night. And again, he's a dreamer. I can't wait to talk to this man because he is absolutely fascinating. There's a funny story about him and the Secret Service that I'm going to get him to tell you. I fell down laughing when I read this. That happened
to
him.
I will have to either tune in or catch that on the podcast. I can't.
Oh, I'm going to. You can't miss it, Liam. It's hysterical, just absolutely hysterical. It has to do with him, Border Patrol, the Secret Service, and a nuclear. Powerhouse, a nuclear powerhouse.
Oh, I definitely have to hear this.
It is fall down funny. I told him when I heard the story, I said, well, my friend, you have arrived. So, ladies and gentlemen, at 8 o'clock tomorrow night, you have to tune in and listen to the show and, as they say, hear the rest of the story because It is worth tuning in for the hour. And I want to thank all of our listeners because you are the reason that my guests get a following on this show. You're the reason that my guests become even more successful than they already are. It is very humbling. It is such an honor. And I am so grateful because this radio show was a dream. It was a 5-year dream, ladies and gentlemen. I've been playing around with this for 5 years. And when I started it, I did not know where it would go, how it would go. But it has taken on its own life form. And I am so grateful for my guest. Leanne, thank you so much for being on this show. And you know that when it goes into archives, I'm going to tag you and the whole nine yards again with the podcast so you can repost it and use this show. Put it on your blog. Put it on your author page. Put it everywhere so that people can hear the show. But thank you so much for continuing to be a guest on my show.
Well, thank you for continuing to have me on.
And when I bring you back, And we interview this young man, what a credit to you. What a milestone for him. He will be even more successful. And when I bring you back just for yourself, tell me some more research and more history. I can't wait. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be off in a few seconds. So with this I say, don't live with regrets. Live your dream. Remember, you only go around once. You don't come around again. And with that, I say, Good evening. And we're going to be off momentarily. You still with me, Leanne? Leanne has gone, so we will say good evening.